Hello, this is Mark Richter with another episode of Linux for the Layman. Want to feel safe, secure, and capable when using your computer? This is for you if you want to succeed and know you can handle your computer tasks with ease. Good day. Because I don't know if you're listening morning, afternoon, evening, or night. This is Linux for the Layman. Today I was going to talk about bash shell functions. I've spoken a little bit about this before. Functions are similar to aliases and similar to shell scripts, but they differ in certain key areas. An alias in the shell is something you execute with or without parameters, but those parameters cannot have anything after them. For example, I have an alias called LRT, and it's short for LS-RT, which is list the files in reverse time order. The most recently modified will be at the end. I find this very useful when I want to look through a directory and find out which for the files I last edited, for example. As an alias, I can type in LRT and it will do that in the current directory. If I type in LRT and give it the name of a directory, it will do that listing in that directory. That's pretty much all I can do with it. In some of my directories, for example, my downloads directory, which is where I typically keep all of my downloads until I move them out to somewhere else, I have quite a few files. I have 243 currently in there. And even with my fairly large windows, these are terminal interface windows, also known as command line windows, my terminal window is 110 characters wide by 72 lines. So 243 is more than three screenfuls of files. That's kind of annoying. Now, I could write a shell script to handle this, and I have lots of shell scripts available. And I can do that. The catch, if you will, is that shell scripts, when they're executed, have to be read in by a bash shell, which is usually a subshell of the shell you're running. What does that mean? That means that bash, your command line interpreter, does not run shell scripts directly. It will call another bash instance to run that shell script. Why does it do this? Because errors in shell scripts can knock you out of your terminal interface if they're serious enough. Error in a subshell will only terminate the subshell and come back to your command line, typically without further ado. There are other characteristics that one might want to take into account, but that's the key one right there. Bash, by the way, stands for born again shell. One of the most recent variants of a Linux shell, which was originated in Unix shells, and the first shell was known as the Born shell. That came out a long time ago. It was added to, then it was stabilized, and there were other shells written that had more features. Bash has what I consider to be the best combination of all features of the shell that were written up to the invention of Bash and has been updated since to do a lot of things that make a lot of sense to add on. One of the key features of the Born shell, or Bash, or pretty much any shell, is that you can set up and access environment variables. These are placeholders that are shortcuts to something. It can be the name of something. It can be a string that contains any number of entities within it. One of the things that shell environment variables are used for is to determine how a program runs. There are some applications that will go and look for a specific environment variable for settings that it will default to when you run the application. Most of this is documented, so you can look it up and see what you're looking for. For example, I have several computers on my house network. The primary computer I use is my desktop. I fondly refer to it as my base. That's an environment variable in all capital letters, capital B, capital A, capital S, capital E. And it is set to the IP address of my desktop. On my desktop, that is not necessarily that useful. But on other machines, they also load these environment variables from their own bash run commands scripts. So base on my laptop will connect from my laptop to my desktop. So if I want to copy files or log in remotely or any of the things, and I don't have to remember what the IP address is. And that's an important feature because IP addresses can change. If you have a Wi-Fi network, they will depend somewhat on the router you're using and how that router determines the names and how you set it up and many other factors. If I buy a new laptop to replace one, then that laptop may have a new IP address, but I want to use the same environment variable to name it for access. I have to change what that value is in the bash run command scripts that are executed by bash when it starts up. You may want to look some of this up on the man page for bash, which I should warn you is somewhere around 5 or 6,000 lines long. It's a very complicated page. You can look these up on the web too, and you can look up features of bash on the web if you want something more tightly constrained than just general information on bash as a whole. For example, if you want to manipulate bash variables, it's a good thing to look up that kind of thing on the web. You can read the bash man page, but it's not as clear as you might like. And there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people who have written articles on this. So back to functions. A function is like halfway between an alias and a shell script. The single biggest advantage of the function is that it is executed within the shell you're running. It doesn't have to go outside to do anything. If you make a mistake in your function and it kills the shell you're running, it will close your window, and that can be really annoying. Generally speaking, doing things in a shell function, the biggest advantage to me, other than the speed, is that I can create one that parameterizes a command, but then does more. For example, my LRT alias that I mentioned, ls-rt, typically I will pipe that through more. What does that mean? ls-rt space vertical bar, the pipe symbol, space more. More will present one screenful of output at a time and then pauses with waiting for you to input something. The most common command these days that's used for that sort of thing, screening or limiting the output to one screenful, is called less. It's more powerful than more, but it can be made to behave like more. For example, my alias for more is a reference to a shell variable, dollar more, space dash lowercase m, capital F, capital X. Dollar more is set to bin less. That's the less command. So this will execute less dash MFX. Dash MFX are flags you can easily look up on the less command that essentially make it run like more in terms of how it prompts you and other things. But the critical piece, the biggest difference between more and less, is that with more, it presents the information as it's presented to the application more, and it presents it one screenful at a time. You can go one line further at a time with the return key, or a whole screenful further at a time with the space bar. What you cannot do is back up. The big advantage, biggest to me, advantage of less over more is that with less, when you get a screenful and you type a space bar, you get another screenful. You go, oh, wait, I want to see what was on that last screen. You can back up. You type B and it backs up a screen. You type F and it goes back forward a screen so that you can get one whole terminal screenful at a time with the ability to back up or go forward again. I pipe the output of LRT to more. Now, suppose I want to be able to LRT a different directory and pipe that output through more or less. I'm going to say it's more, even though it's not. That's something you cannot do in an alias. You can't say LRT space downloads pipe more. You can't make an alias to do that. You can type that command in because LRT is an alias for the command ls-rt. That's it. But if I wanted an alias that said list dash RT some directory and pipe that output through more, no, aliases can't do that. Functions can. So I've defined a couple of new functions because I decided that a whole screenful at a time, or the complete listing without any interruption, as in just LRT by itself, is too much. So I was thinking the other day, I just want the last five lines of the output. So I created a function. A function is defined by the name of the function, open and close parentheses, bracket, with or without spaces in there, they don't matter. Then after the bracket, you type in the body of the function, which tells you what it's going to do. And then when you're done with that, close the bracket or enter a close bracket to terminate the definition of the function. So I wrote one called LR5. The definition looks like this. LR5, left parenthesis, right parenthesis, enter, return. Left bracket, enter, tab in, because when you print this, the shell will do the proper indentation and formatting for you. /bin/ls space dash capital C, capital F, capital H, space dash lowercase r, lowercase t, space $*, space pipe, space tail, which is another application, space dash five. What that means is list in my standard format, which is dash CFH, which is, I forget exactly, columnized with flags for files and H's, but I believe it means don't follow symbolic links. These are easy enough to look up with a man, LS. Dash lowercase RT, that means list them in reverse time order. Time is the last modification time. Pipe the output of that into tail, which is an application that says, show me the end of what you're sent for input. And there's a default number of lines it will do if you just say that pipe tail. I said tail space dash five, which means give me the last five lines. So LR5 on my downloads directory will do a normal list in reverse time order and display only the last five lines of output. Typically, I get two columns of files because I try to keep the names of my files short enough that I can get two columns out of it. And that will show me the last five lines of both columns. I like that idea. I wanted to do more, so I created another one called LRX. LRX will let me specify how many lines I want. And the way this works is it says LRX space left parenthesis, right parenthesis, enter, left bracket, enter, typeset space num, N-U-M, equals $1, semicolon, enter, shift, semicolon, enter, /bin/ls, dash, all caps CFH, space, dash, RT, space, $*, space, pipe, space, tail, space, dash, $num. Enter, right bracket. So what does all that mean? Typeset is how you tell the shell that the variable you're about to define is local to this function. It does not exist outside this function. If you happen to have a variable called num in your environment, or not in the environment, but set in the shell, this one is different. The shell won't confuse the two. It also means that from inside this function, the shell can't access the outer one because this name overrides that, but it doesn't change the value in the outer one. After typeset, it says num equals $1. That will set the local variable num to the value of the first parameter to the function. The next line says shift. What that does is that takes the parameters to the function and shifts them one to the left. The number one is now different. It's what used to be $2. And $2 is now what used to be $3 and so forth. These values may not exist if you haven't put them all on the command line. That's fine. But the first one is invisible now. And then the final command, slash bin slash ls dash cfh dash rt dollar star. Dollar star is all the rest of the parameters that are still left on from the command line. And I'll explain that in a moment. Then pipe that to tail space dash dollar num. So show me the first parameters worth of lines of the output from the ls command. Huh? Example. LRX space 10 space downloads. What that tells this function to do is capture the 10 as a local value, remove it from the parameters, and then call ls on the rest of the parameters, which at this point is now the word downloads, and pipe that through tail dash 10, because tail dash the number you specified is the first parameter. So if I do an LRX 10 of my downloads directory, I get the last 10 lines of output, which again, for me, is two columns. The first column is not so interesting, although it's there. The second column is the last 10 files in reverse time order, reverse modification order. In this case, it happens to be the last 9 files I downloaded and a directory that I copied over to my downloads directory. That's probably long enough for one podcast. I hope you enjoyed this. If you have questions, feel free to write. My email is in the podcast, linuxforthelayman@gmail.com. If you like this, tell your friends. If you liked it a lot, tell your friends and get them to subscribe. Feel free to contribute. I accept donations. No requirement there. However, it does help. And finally, my apologies for the long delay. I had another set of medical interruptions I needed to handle, and hopefully they are now gone, or at least taken care of and finished. Again, I hope you enjoyed the show. Please let me know what you feel. Send me feedback. I am open and I listen. And I hope the sound is better than this, in this than it was in those that came before. See you on the next episode. Bye for now. Correction. In the first part of this episode, I referred to brackets where I meant to say braces. A function is defined by its name, left parenthesis, right parenthesis, left brace. Body of the function, right brace. Please understand all the words brackets should be heard as braces. My apologies. And I'll see you next time. Bye for now.